strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, I appreciate you spending some time with the show. Big reminder, today at 4 o'clock, Gatos and Chad are giving away Cardinals tickets to tomorrow night's game. This is the hottest ticket in town, Cardinals versus Packers. If you want to win a pair of tickets, you're going to have to jump through some hoops to get them. You're going to have to be willing to jump on the air and finish a play-by-play, but it should be a lot of fun. If you want to get in this, you have got to text the word CARDS to 411-923. It's that simple. Text the word CARDS to 411-923. Holiday sales expected to be robust in Arizona despite supply woes, which leads to the next headline, which is when you see it, buy it, according to some retail experts, because it may not be there for the holidays. I want you to hear a little bit of this. Deborah Dale here at KTAR News talked about the jobs report in September.
The September jobs report shows Arizona adding more than 20,000 jobs, and our unemployment rate dropped from 6.2% to 5.7%, the lowest it's been since March of 2020.
We are one of the fastest recovering states. We are, in fact, the third fastest in terms of jobs recovery. We've also had a very healthy workforce recovery. Arizona reached a full workforce recovery in March.
Patrick Patak with the Arizona Commerce Authority tells KTAR last month Arizona saw the second largest unemployment rate decrease in the country.
So along with that, though, it is great that we have people working. There's no doubt about that. The big issue that Arizona is dealing with, like the rest of the country, is inflation. Here in Arizona, there's a news story that was printed about a woman that had her rent raised $700 per month, an increase that economists say is happening across the valley. So, of course, she's not paying the rent that she was when she moved in almost a decade ago. She said her rent usually goes up typically maybe $40 or $50 each year. She currently pays just under $1,300 for roughly a 1,000 square foot bottom floor apartment. It's a significantly higher. I panicked. I mean, it went up almost $700. So when you look at someone's rent that increases like that, I feel for them. There is a supply and demand issue out there. There are a lot of things that need to be addressed and fixed. I've talked about a guest worker program. I think that that would be a fast way to get qualified workers to be legally working to build more homes. It would also help our economy because those people would be paying taxes. If you don't know someone that's in the contracting business, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think it doesn't matter what it is. Plumbers, electricians, air conditioning, carpenters, drywall, you know, framer hangers, those roofers, go and look at people in the trades and ask those business owners or the people that run those businesses what their number one issue right now. It's not taxes. It's not oversight. It's not compliance. It's not having the people to do the work that's out there. That is a decent problem to have in one respect, which is there's high demand. That's terrific. But we have got to get people on these job sites. We have to get more affordable housing built. You start hearing about government subsidies. You start hearing about all of these other things. It is a false way to fix things. It's a simple supply and demand issue at its core. It's complex in a lot of ways. But in the end, we were building over 60,000 homes a year during the big time in the mid-2000s. You know, the 2005 to 2008 when the market crashed. Over 60,000 homes a year. We're not even at 30,000 homes a year right now. And it's a labor shortage. It is not a demand shortage. So how in the world, how do we get this fixed? And it's an issue for leadership. It's about education. I've talked about trade schools. We know that the people are making a good living. We know that the money is available for people to do that. One of the things that motivated me to move here to Arizona was the cost of living. It was very comparable to where I grew up, but the pay was higher here. So if you were someone that was considered middle income, and when I moved out here as an electrician, when I found a job single, that's middle income. You know, I lived a fairly comfortable life. I found an affordable apartment, you know, that kind of thing. But now you see people, what you are going to do and how this is going to stifle the growth in our economy is when people are paying much, much more for the essentials. When rent goes up, when gas prices go up, when grocery prices go up, they don't have the discretionary income, not just to go out to restaurants and to do those things, but to buy a newer vehicle or to make a purchase. Christmas presents are going to be harder to come by, or people are going to go into debt. and they're going to run up credit cards. This is something that every one of us should be concerned about. It's not just about yelling and screaming at somebody we disagree with. It's not just about bashing the Biden administration for this. This is something that every one of us should be concerned about because it's affecting everyday people. And, you know, there's a difference between people that won't work and people that can't work. We should be taking care of the people that can't work. But the people that won't work should be out there working in some capacity. But the other motivation for people to work hard is if it improves their life. I know that we should all be motivated to be self-sufficient. It would be a great world if everybody felt the drive to not be on the public dole, that nobody should have to take care of them but themselves. But a motivator is when you are making a living, when you can see an improved lifestyle, when you have discretionary income, when you put money aside for your future. When those things happen to you, that motivates people. And in this case, what we're seeing happen is a lot of people are not being able to make ends meet, even though they're working hard. Two-income families, it's still not going to be enough. We're hearing about homelessness on the increase for families. Families that never imagined they would be without. And a lot of that has to do with COVID evictions. But on top of that, even if they can afford a place that was at the same level they were at before, now they can pay that rent. They can't pay what it's going up to. A lot of people are being evicted because prices have gone up so much. So if you're a homeowner or if you own rental properties, it's a great market for you right now. But we have to have affordable housing for people. Something has to give. And hearing stories like this, it's, you know, holiday sales are going to be robust, they say, in spite of shortages and all of these things. By the way, the shortages. I was in the grocery store yesterday. I've told a story about my Cuban friends many times and growing up with Cuban family and hearing stories of what Cuba was like. Now, we're not anywhere near what the Cuban people are enduring. But I want you to think about this. When I went with my ex's father-in-law and so it was my father-in-law and his father-in-law, the three of us went to the grocery store. I didn't speak Spanish very well, and he didn't speak any English, but my father-in-law was interpreting for me. We walked into the grocery store, and this guy was blown away. And he was shocked that you could buy whatever you wanted. So he would ask, if we buy bread, can we buy milk? And he said, you can buy whatever you want. And if we buy meat, can we buy cheese? Can we get butter? And he didn't fathom the idea that in America, because they ration food, you can get whatever you want. And there was a woman pushing a very full shopping cart, shopping for her family. He thought she was shopping for the neighborhood. That's the path we're on. We are on a path now where we are hoarding and rationing goods. I saw empty shelves at the grocery store. This is in Arcadia. And we are on a path now with these supply shortages. We've got the government working on climate change. We've got the government working on equity. We've got the government working on all these priorities while we are watching supply chain issues damage every industry in America. That's what's happening. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about COVID. We now have another cancellation, this time in Minnesota, and it's a surgeon. I'm going to explain to you why next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. The cancel culture meets COVID-19 in more ways than one, and we have a great example of this. I want you to hear there is a surgeon, and I want to set this up because it's a video, and you're going to hear, obviously, you're going to hear it, not see it. This is a surgeon wearing scrubs. He's at a city council meeting or a school board meeting, and he's talking about masking children in schools. And he is saying that he believes that, you know, we should allow the parents to make the final decision and why we should allow the parents to make the final decision on masking.
You mandate this across the board? That's a tough place to go. Who does God put in charge of these kids? Their parents. And they speak for them. They may be wrong, they may be dumb, they may be perfect in their decisions, but it's still their responsibility. It's not yours.
Very well said. They may be dumb, they may be wrong, or they may be perfect in the decisions they make, but the decision is still theirs. He said, God gave those children to the parents, not you. It's not your decision. Ultimately, parents should decide. And I watched that and I thought, wow, that's incredible. Doctor got fired. That surgeon lost his job because of that statement. So wherever you stand on mandates, wherever you stand on vaccines, wherever you are positioned on that, should that guy have lost his job? Do you understand what we are doing? There's a reason why we have a First Amendment. There are a lot of people that say things that are controversial. There are a lot of people that lie. There are a lot of people that say things that are just crazy. But since when do we scrub those? You know, the National Enquirer made millions of dollars with Bigfoot and alien stories for years, for decades. And everybody, well, I shouldn't say everybody, most people understood that what was in the National Enquirer was garbage. I mean, it wasn't true. It was all these stories about, you know, the alien abductions and aliens in the White House and Bigfoot, and they finally captured one and there's a frozen one somewhere and all these outlandish stories. Should we have scrapped because some people believed it. There were people that believed that what was in the National Enquirer was actual news, and that if you didn't believe that it was actual news, it's because you were too brainwashed by the real news, by the, you know, the mainstream media, that this was the real news that was out there. So should we have scrapped that? Should that be gone? And what's funny is people will say, well, it's only when it's dangerous. Well, who deems it dangerous? I'll tell you what's dangerous. When you stifle people speaking, I can completely disagree with someone and fiercely defend their right to say what they're saying. I've used the illustration of the flag before. I personally believe desecrating the American flag is the most disrespectful, despicable thing you can do as an American. But I will defend your right to do it. And I've seen people do it to try to get a rise out of veterans. I was at a veterans event once. And this group of protesters showed up and they had a large American flag and a large Arizona flag. This was at the Arizona State Capitol on the mall between the House and the Senate at the Capitol. And we had a rally going on, and these protesters set up very close to us, and it was a veterans event. And they put these two flags on the ground, and they had spray painted derogatory comments on the flags. And now they've got the American flag and the Arizona flag laying on the ground, large flags. And then they had kids, and I mean kids as young as 7, 8, 10 years old, and they were marching, doing, you know, the Nazi march with the stiff legs and making the Heil Hitler sign, marching over top of the flags in front of veterans, specifically trying to get veterans, a rise out of veterans to start trouble. And there was no trouble. But they knew they were insulting these veterans by doing it. Did they have a right to? Absolutely. Did it show who they are? Absolutely. It shows who you are. I think it's a despicable display. But we have a First Amendment in this country. Your right to speak your mind has got to be protected. If we don't stand up now and defend the First Amendment, now is when it's under attack. All in the interest of fairness, all in the interest of honesty, all the things we believe in. Hate speech. What in the world is hate speech? You listen to the people. I'll give you an example. Dave Chappelle is they're going after him. The cancel culture is going after him. There is a transgender woman that is kind of the leader of the movement against Dave Chappelle. Somebody went onto her Twitter account and found old audio, I mean, old tweets of her ripping Asian and Latino business owners. You dropping the F-bomb. English is my first effing language. Speak effing English, and talking about business owners and that were Latino and Asian. Isn't that hate speech? Isn't that hate speech? She wants to shut up Dave Chappelle because Dave Chappelle cracks jokes about the transgender community. At the same time, this is going on. Absurd. Absolutely absurd. In a moment, Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams joins me on the show, so stick around for it. It should be a great time.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. Joining me in studio, Chief Jerry Williams, Phoenix Police Department. Chief, welcome.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
We got so much to try to cover in the short time we have. Let's start with staffing.
Yes.
We know that Phoenix has had a staffing issue for a very long time. It's been at a crisis level for a long time, but it's getting worse.
It is, Mike. And so, you know, instead of just kind of putting our heads in the sand, we're really trying to figure out a way to mitigate that, to make sure that we're able to respond to those calls for service to our community. We're about 350 cops down at the moment.
From where you normally are or for where you need to be?
Well, we're supposed to be at 3125-ish or so is our number. We're sitting right at about 2,700 at the moment. So we're far from where we're supposed to be.
How do you get that number 3,100? Because I know the statistic that you're half the size of Philadelphia. We're bigger in landmass.
Yes.
We're higher in population.
Yes.
So it seems to me like you need to double the size of your agency.
So it would be lovely to have that many police officers. But when we look at the budget is saying 3125 is what our floor is going to be or should be. You and I both know the nationwide challenges law enforcement is having with hiring people. So we've had to get creative. And getting creative for us right now is specialty to patrol or having some of our detectives that are inside going outside and helping assist the men and women in patrol.
Now, you've had to do that before, and now you're the expert. Correct me if I'm wrong. But when that happens, you have officers responding to crimes in progress.
Yes.
But proactive policing suffers, and you then don't have the detectives to investigate the crimes.
Which is 100% accurate and true. But what we're trying to do this time is making sure that when the detectives go out, they're giving that knowledge base to the younger officers, but still able to carry some of their caseload. Truth be told, though, let's talk about victims' crimes. We do have violent crime. Violent crime is an issue in this city. I have to make sure that a police department has to make sure that when you're a victim of a crime, you pick up the phone, you call 911. I got a blue suit responding and someone to answer that call and the communications in. From there, we take the report. From there, we give it to a detective, to your point, to investigate what's going on. And in the end, arrest the bad guy and then submit that case to the county attorney's office or to the city attorney's office.
And so, but it also is a customer service issue. And if somebody calls for a police officer, that's not an emergency. Mm-hmm. You have a problem with a neighbor. Something's been vandalized. There's a long wait time for a lot of that. It's not your fault, but it's not the officer's fault. It's just you don't have enough people to field all of these, right?
Well, we don't have enough people to field those, but we're also, too, trying to think smarter about policing and being more effective and efficient. So we're working with the Arizona State University to kind of identify those quote-unquote calls for service that we shouldn't respond to, something that's a neighbor dispute, loud, noise-disturbing, truancy call for in thinking about it, when we talk about the CAP program with the city, mental health calls that aren't criminal calls. My folks shouldn't be responding to those calls. We as a community need to figure out how to mitigate that.
So how much of what's happening is a morale issue that has to do with anti-policing? And is there a morale issue within the department with management, with you know, your command staff?
So one would always say that there is a morale issue no matter how you slice it. No matter how wonderful things are or how bad things are, there's going to be a morale issue. Long story short, I can't solely focus on that dynamic. I have to go out and talk to my people and tell them what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. So we've been hitting briefings. We've been over-communicating to our employees. But at the end of the day, Mike, what's so critically important to men and women in law enforcement is for the community to say thank you. I can't tell you how wonderful it is when we go to restaurants, we go to community events, and the simple words, thank you for your service, mean the world to all of our officers.
All right, so let me put you on the spot for a moment.
Okay.
How much of it, though, when you have a city council with a couple of people that are not necessarily pro-police, and you have now an office of accountability that they say they don't want anybody connected to law enforcement in the office, with it almost seems like they're adversarial to the police. What does that do to the morale of senior officers that are saying, listen, I can be out, I'm leaving?
So the way I would address that, I am not afraid of an outside entity looking at my department. I've said that from day one. I'm going to work with the Office of Accountability and Transparency. At the end of the day, though, as I said before, our employees want to feel valued and appreciated by mayor, council, by the community, by the business community, you name it. And we're in talks with mayor and council at this moment to try to figure out what that's going to look like for us moving forward.
So My issue, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but my issue is when it feels like leadership at the city doesn't have your back and you have officers that have such a dangerous job to begin with, if they are forced into a violent situation, they shouldn't have to worry that there's somebody out there that wants to get them. And it feels to me like this Office of Accountability isn't just about accountability. It's about getting officers.
So the way I look at it, it's an extra set of eyes to give us suggestions on what we can do and can't do better. In the conversations that I've had in briefings with our employees, we've talked about and mentioned the fact that the public has this expectation of quote unquote perfection. We're humans. We can't be perfect, but at the end of the day, we can be professional with every single stop in every single call. So we're making sure, I'm making sure the employees have the tools they need, have the support that they need, have the equipment that they need to do the job and to do it safely and effectively and hopefully efficiently.
All right. So the staffing issue, one is recruitment. The other is officer retention.
Yes.
What are you doing about how are you trying to retain the officers you have?
Great, great question. So we've established a sergeant's position that when employees decide that they want to leave or go someplace else and or retire prior to going to into the deferred retirement option program, Sergeant Rothschild is going out talking to people to find out some of the whys so we can try to mitigate and manage some of those whys. I mean, we actually took that out of our hives. So I didn't go ask for a new position. We found it so important to find out why people are leaving and the conditions that they're leaving and what can we do to mitigate that to be so important that we assigned an officer to that position.
Phoenix Union decided that they were going to get rid of school resource officers. How do you feel about that?
How I feel about it, it's their choice not to have that service. I can tell you I had two sons that went to Phoenix Union High School District. I'm a Phoenix Union High School District person, although I'm so old we didn't have school resource officers at the time. I thought it was a benefit to have the school resource officers when my sons were going to North High School.
I'm not going to do it, but the story about your son in North High in a basketball game that you were asked to leave, we'll talk about that later,
okay.
I think. But I want to know, when you look at school resource officers, if in my mind, if we are trying to improve the relationship between officers and the community that they serve, one of the best ways that can be is in a non-confrontational situation as a school resource officer. I still remember my deputy resource officer, and I graduated from high school in 1985.
Wow.
So that seems to me to be one of the relationships they'd want to build.
So in talking to a lot of the individuals we talked to this past weekend during the GAIN or getting Arizona involved in neighborhoods, one of our first stops we made was at a non-traditional school who talked about how he loved his school resource officer and how it initially that confrontation kind of relationship happens, but over time it becomes a relationship between Mike and Jerry versus, you know, Chief Williams and the KTAR guy kind of thing. So I think those relationships are important, and we as a community need to figure that out.
Yeah, showing the human side of officers. And I'm doing features on TV about officers and the great things they do in the community. And so many officers are serving in capacities outside of policing that shows a different side, coaching basketball, soccer, football, because it shows them as human beings.
Right.
And I think that's so important to be able to see, because a lot of times cops can't show that human side. They've got to put up that wall during their job. But in real life, it shows the human beings they are.
Well, in real life, we're mothers, we're fathers, we're husbands, we're wives, we're partners, we're spouses, and we care about our community and care about our fellow person. So we are that epitome of human kindness and compassion.
All right, I got to take a break. When we get back, I want to talk to you about COVID-19 because it's affecting everybody.
But
I want to find out how it's affecting Phoenix PD and the story that's out about how first responders have such a higher rate of infection of even frontline medical workers in hospitals.
All right,
we've got one more segment with Chief Jerry Williams in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, we are back in studio. With me is Chief Jerry Williams, Phoenix Police Department. One thing I didn't ask you about or you didn't talk about was sign-on bonuses.
Yes.
For officers.
Right. So what we're trying to do is get folks in the door. We talked a little bit about the COVID mandates, and anyone who is being mandated to be vaccinated, we're looking for you if you're going to be a good police officer. But we have $7,500 signing bonuses for new officers, and then $2,500 if you recruit someone to be a Phoenix police officer and they get successfully hired.
So I was told by someone today that Salt River PD lost about 25% of their officers because of a COVID mandate.
Yes.
So it's got to be a fine line for you about suggesting that you want officers that are vaccinated, but also realizing that you'll take them if they're suffering from, you know, Tucson or whoever it is, right?
Right, right. So we have recruitment folks reaching out to both of those agencies, as well as we're finally able to travel again since COVID hit. So we're heading to Ohio. Some would say, why are you going to Ohio? And that's because we found through some metrics that that's going to be a great place to recruit folks. And folks in the Midwest want to leave that kind of weather and come here to sunny, amazing Phoenix, Arizona to be police officers.
When you look at the landscape and mitigation strategies for officers, because you can't always be in a position to mask up and do the things that are necessary.
Yeah.
How has it changed for your officers in training and what you do to mitigate? Because we've heard that the cases are much higher in first responders because of that.
So what we've had to do early on in COVID, we had to separate recruit classes. So we didn't have to shut down the academy in its entirety, but we had to come up with creative ways to teach and train folks. We know very well that the first responders are there. They're going to respond. They're just going to take care of business. But at the end of the day, the COVID mandate is a city mandate. The city gives us incentives to be vaccinated. The city provides opportunities for us to be vaccinated. So we're trying to make sure that when you have the worst day of your life, that we're there to be able to respond and help you.
And it's got to be, and we've talked so much about medical workers and worried about their families. It's got to be the same for cops. You're doing a tough job, and now it's dangerous. You could be bringing that home to your families. That's got to be something else that officers worry about.
So you bring up another great point. Again, we're human just like everyone else. So I am certain that our officers, to whatever degree possible, are making sure that their families are safe. I can tell you I have a firefighter son who will disrobe, if you will, prior to coming inside the house because he doesn't know what's on him and then wash those clothes. I know police officers do the same thing because we're always worried and concerned about making sure our families stay healthy.
When you look at the growth of Phoenix, how aggressive are you in trying to get budget increases to increase the size of your agency?
So we're always looking at that. I can say this, Mike, with 100% certainty. We go to mayor and council, and I have regular talks and conversations with the mayor and with council. They understand this dynamic. They understand that we have needs that are definitely greater than we're provided, and they're willing to sit at the table and talk with us and through us with it, as well as working with the labor organizations.
So that's another great question. Your dealings with PLEA and the Sergeant and Lieutenant's Associations, how has that changed? Or do you have a good rapport with them?
So I believe I have a good working relationship with both of those organizations. It's really nice to have people that you grew up with in the organization sit at the table and try to mitigate through circumstances and situations. We're not going to always agree, but I will tell you this, both of the agencies and organizations are professional as I am with them.
I've said publicly, I think when you were on the air with me one time, I talked about there isn't anybody in the country more qualified than you are to deal with some of the anti-policing stuff that's going on. And you added a point to mine, which I said to you, African-American woman raised in Phoenix, raised in the police department that you now serve as chief.
Yes.
But you added to that, you raised two African-American sons in this town.
Absolutely.
So are you consulted in other cities? Do people reach out to you?
So that is a yes. So I sit on the Major City Chiefs board and the executive board, acting interim president of MCCA at the moment. But folks are always contacting me all over the country because I do have that lens. So I always like to say I'm the police chief who happens to be black, female, mom, wife, raised in Phoenix.
So how do you balance that with officers keeping, you know, you still have to be pro cop.
Yes.
But you also are looking at the community and saying, yes. Really, how do you balance that?
So that's a great question. And we've been talking about that in briefings lately. The idea and notion of being professional has no color, has no ethnicity, has no gender. You have got to be the consummate professional because that's the expectation. At the same time, it is incumbent upon my employees, our officers, to really listen to what's going on in the community. And there are going to be some times where we're going to have to take a couple steps back and readjust.
But there is a perception in some communities that police treat people differently in those communities. Sometimes it's real. Sometimes it's not.
Right.
How do you deal with the two?
You deal with the two by having conversations with both sides and putting myself right in the middle because my lens allows me to see some of the dynamics in people, persons of color's community, as well as the blue side of the community because I know what the officers are going through. In the briefing conversations that we've had of late, my folks have a more difficult job than I ever did 32 years ago, 100,000% more difficult. At the end of the day, though, it's about the badge and it's about the patch. And whenever something good or bad happens, it does impact law enforcement, and that's our responsibility. To make sure it's not a negative impact.
Speaking of the badge, you guys are wearing pink badges.
We are.
Explain them.
So we have breast cancer awareness badges that we're wearing. It's also Domestic Violence Month, too, so we're kind of trying to mitigate both of those. But we always want to bring awareness to the fact that breast cancer is something that has impacted most of us in the community, and this is our show of support in wearing this badge.
That's very cool.
It's awesome.
Line of duty deaths, we just saw MCSO have one. It's got to affect you to watch this happen, especially as many years as you've spent here.
So I will say this, as a leader of the organization, you're always impacted by the death of your own, but also feeling for that other law enforcement executive that's having to go through that same process that you go through. And that's not to take away from the family. It's not to take away from the squad. It's not to take away from the precinct. But it's a very unique pain and hurt and responsibility that you feel as a leader.
And it's got to be tough with these officers to keep them motivated and focused when they're suffering such a loss.
Well, but that's why it's so important to have employee assistance units, to have folks like you who get on the air and show support for our employees. Also for those community members who, and it seems so trivial, to stand along the route, the processional route, to show support.
Chief, I always appreciate you coming in. 30 minutes is a lot of time for you. I know that. So thanks for doing this today.
So thank you very much. And I do want to give a shout out to the Blue Ribbon Campaign ladies who tie those ribbons all over the place. So thank you to Blue Ribbon ladies.
All right. That is Chief Jerry Williams. And we'll be back in a moment.